Ayatollah Khamenei urges the Iranian nation to remain united in the face of enemy plots aimed at bringing the Islamic Republic to its knees. The death toll from Monday's powerful earthquakes in Turkey and in Syria keeps rising as rescue and search operations continue. And President Biden issues a new warning to China amid high tensions over a Chinese balloon entering U.S. airspace. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution warns the Iranian nation about the enemy's plot to bring the Islamic Republic to its knees by creating discord and mistrust within the people. Ayatollah Khamenei said the enemy has employed various tactics to pursue a strategy of driving a wedge among the Iranians. The enemy's tactic, as the leader added, is spreading lies and rumors. Ayatollah Khamenei also said that Iran's foes claim that they are not seeking to subvert the Islamic Republic, while the conspiracies that they have hatched over the years prove otherwise. Mentioned the reason for the enemy's efforts to eradicate the Islamic Republic as well. He said that is because Iran has cut their access to the West Asia region. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks in a meeting with Iranian Air Force commanders and personnel. The meeting was held on the anniversary of the historic allegiance of the Iranian Air Force with the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, in 1979. Search and rescue teams continue to look for possible survivors in the piles of rubble in Syria and also in Turkey, as people are struggling to reel from two powerful back-to-back earthquakes. According to official figures, the death toll has risen to more than 9,000 in Turkey and over 2,600 in Syria. The World Health Organization has warned that the number of fatalities could cross 20,000 as freezing weather and aftershocks have slowed rescue efforts. The earthquakes, measuring 7.8 and 7.5 on the Richter scale, struck southeastern Turkey and northern Syria on Monday. The tremors caused hundreds of buildings to collapse in the two countries. The natural disaster left some 50,000 people injured and thousands more displaced. And staying with the story, Iran has sent its third batch of humanitarian aid to Syria to help the Arab country in the aftermath of devastating earthquakes.
We want to prove to the Syrian nation that we have always stood by them and will continue to support them, not only during the war and economic hardship, but also during natural disasters.
Iran's consul general said the latest batch of aid included food, blankets, and carpets. He added that Iran will send more humanitarian supplies to Syria in the coming days. An Iranian plane carrying 18 tons of aid landed at Aleppo's airport. Earlier, Iran urged the international community to put pressure on the U.S. to lift its cruel sanctions on Syria to facilitate aid deliveries. The unlawful sanctions have complicated international efforts to assist Syrians who have been devastated by Monday's quakes. Human rights activist Gina Rabai gives us her take on how the U.S. anti-Syria sanctions have complicated the international efforts in assisting the earthquake-hit country.
Unfortunately, we witnessed that international discrimination in the way Syria was dealt with. We did witness that. Only because it is under an American economic blockade, we witnessed that many countries were swift in sending rescue teams and aid to Turkey, while most countries, even Arab countries, hesitated to break the American blockade on Syria and provide rescue to the devastated Syrian people. Of course, America did not lift its siege on Syria, even in these difficult circumstances, and it always used to pretext that it was a siege on the regime and not on the people. And this is a lie that no sane person would believe. But today it has proven more clearly that its siege is on the people who elected the president and the regime, which did not submit to America and did not hand over the sovereignty of Syria to America and fought the U.S. terrorist project in Syria and defeated it. And that is why the Syrian people are punished and the consequences of the humanitarian crisis is multiplied on them today. But the most tragic thing in all of this is the response of many countries to the American blockade and the excessive reluctance to help the Syrian people.
Israeli media say that Palestinians have performed 900 operations against regime forces during the past month. Channel 13 has enumerated 692 stone throwings, 103 Molotov cocktail throwings, and 77 bomb operations in January alone. The occupied Palestinians have witnessed an escalation of tensions in recent weeks. The regime has intensified crackdown on Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Palestinian officials have on many occasions slammed the Israeli violence and warned the regime over its persistent crimes. Tel Aviv has also accelerated its settlement activities that are regarded as illegal under international law and the Geneva Conventions. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says that Tehran remains committed to creating a peaceful, stable, and developed Afghanistan. Ali Shamkhani said that Iran always stood by the Afghan people during their hardships over the past four decades. He reiterated Tehran's readiness to contribute to Afghanistan's reconstruction, as well as its political, economic, cultural, and social developments. He also touched on frozen Afghan assets in the U.S., saying that they belong to the people of the war-torn country and can play a pivotal role in the reconstruction process. Further, Shamkhani urged Washington to stop turning Afghanistan into a stage to create instability in the region. He made the remarks during the fifth round of the Moscow format consultations on Afghanistan. The regional security dialogue was established with the initiative of the Islamic Republic in 2018. The U.S. president has issued fresh warning to China amid a new controversy between the two countries over a Chinese balloon that recently entered into American airspace.
I'm committed to work with China where we can advance American interests and benefit the world, but make no mistake about it. As we made clear last week, if China threatens our sovereignty, we will act to protect our country, and we did.
Joe Biden's tirade came during his annual State of the Union address. He called for investments in the military, technology, and alliances to take on China, which the U.S. widely views as its chief competitor. The two big economies remain at odds over a host of regional and international issues. Tensions flared up after the U.S. downing of a Chinese balloon, which Washington claimed was on a spy mission. Beijing slammed as overreaction the U.S. move, saying that the balloon was on a meteorological and other scientific missions and accidentally strayed into U.S. airspace. Well, in the meantime, the U.S. President Joe Biden has been heckled by Republicans during his State of the Union speech over comments that he made regarding national debt management.
Some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Let me give you, anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy. I'll give you a making the wealthy pay their fair.
They were reacting to Biden's accusation that some Republicans want to, quote, take the economy hostage. Biden also said that some GOP lawmakers wanted to end government-funded retirement and health insurance programs in exchange for raising the debt ceiling, claimed the Republicans vehemently deny. Biden was referring to a proposal introduced by Republican Senator Rick Scott last year, who suggested ending civil entitlements such as Social Security to manage the economy. The U.S. has been struggling with a four-decade-high inflation caused by the COVID pandemic and exacerbated by its support for Ukraine and the conflict with Russia. Time now for the news review of this bulletin. The Ukrainian president has urged Western allies to supply his country with combat aircraft as the war with Russia is about to enter its second year. Volodymyr Zelensky made the request while addressing the British Parliament. He hailed Britain as one of the first countries to support Ukraine in the conflict. Zelensky also met with the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, who vowed to back Ukraine to ensure decisive military victory on the battlefield. Ahead of the meeting, the Downing Street announced a fresh round of sanctions targeting organizations relied on by the Russian military. It also unveiled plans to send more military equipment to Kiev to help it counter Russia's advances. Zelensky is in the UK in a rare foreign visit just weeks before the first anniversary of the Russian war. The visit comes as Kiev's Western backers are debating to step up military aid for Ukraine against a feared new Russian offensive in the east. Our correspondent Tamina Taylor joins us from London to give us the latest on this visit. Greg Simmons is a researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies, who joins us from Uppsala, Sweden, for an analysis. Okay, welcome to you both. Amina, let me first start with you. Tell us more about what Zelensky has said, what he, I'm sure, has requested, and also the venue of where this took place and what that symbolizes.
Well, if there were any doubt, Kaveh, that the British state apparatus is very much in favor of the Ukrainian position in this conflict, then you need not look any further than the rapturous welcome that Zelensky was given by British parliamentarians from both sides of the aisle. I mean, they can't agree on, you know, how to end strike action here. They can't agree on ending austerity or trying to do something to deal with this cost of living crisis, but they can all agree that the celebrity commander in chief in the form of Zelensky is greeted in this fashion. I mean, I will touch on the fact that he was at Buckingham Palace to meet Charles III later, but this is very much the drive in the Zelensky Ukraine machine here to drum up more support. Anytime there is any visual aids here that Russia may be advancing or the conflict might not be going the way the West might have hoped and not as quickly as they would have hoped, then we get these surprise visits. We had the situation in Washington just a few weeks ago. Britain became the second country to greet Zelensky on these surprise missions. He's now on his way to Paris for more of the same. I mean, it is very difficult to look at the way in which Downing Street first, as you mentioned in your introduction there, talked of the increasing sanctions that it was trying to level on Russian interests, though I can't understand where there'd be more sanctions to be found, if I'm honest, since everything is being squeezed within an inch of its life if it has any kind of Russian connections. Russophobia is at its highest level. And I think, see, it's coming from the state down. You know, very few Brits would have known the name Volodymyr Zelensky before the beginning of this conflict. But the way in which his reputation as this wartime leader is being amplified and the different pledges that Britain is making as a country, more armaments, more support for its troops, the Marines being trained, soldiers being trained, I can't see how this can be anything other than a road to further escalation. Why would you not want to de-escalate this crisis, not turn it into a race into who can throw more munitions and support at Ukraine? I simply don't understand the logic here, Kav.
All right, Greg Simmons, taking a look at one aspect is not really perhaps touched on that much while Amina was talking there, that came to my mind to ask you, and that is how we see Zelensky come into these high-profile venues in order to make his presence known. Okay, so today we saw the venue that he was in, and then weeks prior to that when he made his trip to the U.S. I think in some opening bells down on Wall Street, he's also made appearances. I think he's also made appearances at the Oscars, if I'm not mistaken, and different types of venues where the masses are watching. Is that a way for the governments that are involved to tell the people or to highlight Ukraine in the way that they need to, so that they can push out the aid to, or extend the aid to Ukraine, so that the ordinary Main Street doesn't get too angry and frustrated based on their own economic conditions? Is that one way, perhaps, of looking at this?
Well, I think you need to look at it from the perspective of political marketing. And this political marketing is trying to market Zelensky as some kind of Churchill, this brave wartime commander who's standing up to the world. I mean, this was exactly what the British and the Americans did to Winston Churchill before the United States got involved in the Second World War. They needed to sell the person in order to garner public support. But I mean, if one looks at the effect, well, I mean, that Churchill went to the United States as Zelensky is going to the United Kingdom, I mean, it ended Churchill and Britain as being any kind of subject and turned it into an object, because they're going as a junior, they're going with cap in hand saying, please, sir, can I have some more? And this is what it is. It's a begging to try and drum up some political support and some military weapons, which are going to be second rate and not really alter the outcome, which is going to be soon decided.
Thank you very much for that. Amina Taylor there, correspondent from London, from Uppsala, Sweden. We appreciate it. Greg Simmons, researcher at the Institute for Russian and Eurasian Studies. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this news review. Thanks for tuning in. North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un has called for the strengthening and development of the country's armed forces as tensions remain high on the Korean Peninsula. Kim issued the call while visiting soldiers ahead of an expected military parade to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the founding of the Korean People's Army. He lauded the army, saying that it would do more for the prosperous development of the socialist motherland. One day earlier, while attending a banquet, Kim also pledged to expand drills and to beef up war readiness. Following Kim's comments, South Korea's President Yoon Suk-yeol urged a posture of readiness in the face of what he called a rapidly changing security situation in the region. Military activities have significantly increased in the Korean Peninsula, with both Pyongyang and Seoul accusing each other of escalating tensions. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bazaar.
Wherever you go, you are surrounded by real estate, whether they are houses, offices, shops, hotels, or education, or even healthcare facilities. These buildings are all the products of Realty Development. Property is a multi-business. It can involve buying land and building on it, renovating or improving, or converting property from one use to another. All of which adds higher value to the area. Property developers quite literally build the world around us, creating and changing the environments we inhabit and use on our daily basis.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will take a look at Iran's housing and light construction industry. We want to uncover how this market is doing and what contributions it is making to living standards along with the economy. Time to light up today's Bazaar.
In order to become more familiar with the activities of light construction in Iran, we decided to visit a real estate developer in the capital city, Tehran. Nexa Group was established over a decade ago and is a known name in the construction industry. Essentially, it develops luxury properties for residential purposes. In a nutshell, a developer adds value to land or property. What sets this company apart from other developers is its choice of cream-of-the-crop architects who are highly creative, innovative, and experienced in the field of design. Clients who have land they wish to develop can seek the services of this contractor. This company then enters a contract with the owner and begins the process of vetting architects for designing its buildings. In recent years, several competitions have been held by this developer for residential projects. The winning design that meets the high standards of this company and its clients is awarded the project. But that's not all. This company also has a vast network of highly specialized subcontractors to take care of other aspects of construction, such as structure engineering, excavators, and so on. Among its many activities, this developer provides building management services. Such services include maintenance of plumbing, electrical, and mechanical installations of the building.
There are several different types of property development. Some are large scale, meaning that several lots of land are being developed into a single plot. These types of developments can be subdivided and sold individually or as a whole. There are also developments for commercial and sports uses, such as shopping centres and stadiums. Ooh, I like the sound of this.
Projects at this company range from low to medium density residential buildings. This developer also pays particular attention to designing buildings that are environmentally friendly. Most of its buildings are constructed following green practices that also elevate the living standards and quality of experience of its end users. One of its most recent residential projects is called Phoenix. What is most unique about this building is that it was designed based on the traditional nine-square method of Iranian architecture. This green building incorporates the needs of people during the coronavirus pandemic, which includes spaces for working from home. Large investments are made in real estate development each day. But adding value to the property, such as luxury structures with numerous amenities, are what really drive profits. And this company is ready to work with foreign investors and export its services along these lines. One of the competitive advantages of this developer, relative to others in the country, are its innovative and exceptional designs that gain the attention of clients and customers. Its luxury developments are geared to entice customers with more accommodations, higher-end options that integrate an entire lifestyle, and an elevated culture of living. The quality of its work has increased competition in the domestic market, making its buildings a must-have among customers. This property developer also has a unique view of the US-imposed sanctions, which has helped the company thrive throughout the years.
Iran has a growing population of around 85 million people, and the majority of the population is still young. But as time goes by, this population will age as they start families. With this in mind, many of them are embarking on the journey of purchasing homes. And for this to become possible, more housing units need to be constructed to meet this growing need.
The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development estimates that the per capita of housing for each Iranian is around 200 square meters. This means that 17 billion square meters of buildable land is needed to house every Iranian. According to the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the annual demand for homes stands at 900,000 units. In more general terms, according to the Ministry of Housing, some 10 million units are currently needed. This is while the average annual production volume for homes is around 300,000 units. So around 1 million residential units need to be built each year to satisfy this demand. Figures from the Statistics Center of Iran show construction of housing increased by nearly 40% last year. Data from the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development show municipalities issue an average of 350,000 residential construction permits each year. Of this amount, roughly 70% lead to construction. However, experts say this is not nearly enough to meet annual housing demands. Last year, the housing construction market saw a slump in completing projects. This was mainly due to the jump in land prices and construction materials that deepened the housing recession. The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development says housing prices have increased by 200% over the last 5 years. This has increased the purchase parity, making some vulnerable groups unable to buy a home.
It might be interesting to know that this issue has gathered the attention of the government for some time now. The government has implemented initiatives to help people purchase homes. One of these initiatives was to increase the amount of bank loans for first home buyers. Several other plans are also underway, such as the vacant house tax plan, to increase the amount of available homes.
President Ibrahim Raisi has pledged to build 1 million residential units each year for the next 4 years. This scheme was presented to address and prevent a housing shortage in the country. The Building Contractors Association says planning, execution, and building material is available. It emphasized that with large investments and land allocation, this plan can easily go forward. but authorities contend that infrastructure, such as electricity and water connectivity, requires more planning. Government officials also say wrinkles in the financial model for this project still need to be ironed out. Iran is entirely self-sufficient when it comes to construction material, according to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. Steel, glass, and cement is produced in abundance in the country. In fact, the surplus of these items are exported to several countries around the world. Meanwhile, the light construction industry in Iran is booming amid a long housing recession. New spaces and innovative designs that incorporate the needs of people are being built. Homes are not just a place to live, they are increasingly being seen as a source of capital and a place to increase the quality of living standards. There is also a growing trend towards designing sustainable buildings that reduce emissions and negative environmental impacts. All these achievements make this industry a promising one with a bright future. It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested. Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card, so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs. Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company.
Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit.
Now it's that time of the show for me to step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague has another awesome field report lined up for you. Take it away.
The basis of the steel industry is iron ore. It's courtesy of this critical raw material that the steel is all around us. In the beneficiation process, the gangue minerals, or the mineral matter of no value that occurs with the metallic ore, is removed from the mineral substance and iron ore concentrate is produced. The concentrate is then shipped from mining plants as a bulk commodity by rail.
Hi again. The wagons carrying the iron ore concentrate have reached their destination. What happens at this stage is that through a gargantuan machine, they are overturned. This is called a wagon tippler. What it does is that it tips the wagons. Look, it retains the wagons from the top and it overturns them. First, the wagons are detached from other wagons and then they're lifted over here. And look at those arms. Look at those arms, how gigantic they are. And now they're going to retain the wagon, overturn it to empty its load into a container. From that container, the iron ore concentrate is going to be mixed. First, it's going to travel through some distance and is going to be mixed with some additives to be fed into the pelletizing process.
In this week's feature program, we visited Chodormalu Industrial Facility located in the center of Iran, Yazd province. The iron ore concentrate must be pelletized for use in iron and steel making. In summary, pelletizing is achieved by combining the iron ore with water and a specific binder, which is then rolled up in a balling drum to produce relatively uniform pellets, which can then be easily handled in downstream processes.
And here we are. The powder is the iron ore concentrate now mixed with some additive. It is now fed into large discs. In this industrial complex, everything is just enormous. This is called the pelleting disc. It's really huge. Now, what happens here is through the use of centrifugal force, the powder gets compressed and it's just pushed to the edges of this disc. And after the powder completes a couple rotations, and as it grows in size, then it forms the pellets. And once it is just large enough, it will exit the rotation because of that centrifugal force, and it moves over to the conveyor belt, and it's now time for grading. Now, those particles that are just perfect in size and shape, they will move on to travel over to the kiln, where the content moisture is removed and sintering takes place. So the iron pellet now gets hardened, and after that, cooling takes place. Now, stay with us for more.
Chaturmalu's pelletizing plant, with a production capacity of 3.4 million tons per year, employs 500 people directly and another 3,000 indirectly. The iron ore pellets will be transferred to stackers and are piled in an area which can store 300,000 tons of pellets.
Fe2O3, I don't know how familiar you are with chemistry and the chemical reactions and the periodic table, but anyway, at this stage of the process, Fe2O3 is going to be turned into Fe through a process that is called direct reduction of iron. And this process is done by three main stages. The first stage occurs above furnace. The pellets are poured into the furnace. And what happens inside the furnace is two gases are going to hit the pellets. The gases are carbon monoxide and molecular hydrogen. They're extracted from natural gas through a process that is called reformation. And two gases are going to hit the pellets, and through three chemical reactions, Fe2O3 is going to turn into Fe, which is called the reduced iron, or also sponge iron because of its high porosity. Now, this process can be done in two different ways. One is called hot direct reduction of iron, and the other one is called cold direct reduction of iron. Now, I'm going to move on to the next and the final stage, steel production.
Hot direct reduced iron, or HDRI, is DRI that is transported hot directly from the reduction furnace into an electric arc furnace, thereby saving energy. Whereas cold DRI is the one that is cooled and stored before being charged to a furnace. Well, on the face of it, there's no reason for facilities to even consider cold DRI, but in reality, it's not really that simple. The development of mankind would have been impossible but for steel. It fueled the Industrial Revolution and remains the backbone of modern industrialized economies. The process continues with primary steelmaking, which is done via electric arc furnace at Chaturmalu, and then moves on to secondary steelmaking, which involves treating, continuous casting, and shaping.
The final product is made, the steel billet, and you can tell how hot it is in here. Well, the process here starts with the electric arc furnace. It melts the sponge iron that I talked about earlier. And what happens next is that we need some ladles. Ladles are containers. They're going to contain the molten material. Then the ladles are taken over some molds. Molds are going to carry the molten material. And as the molten material is carried over some distance, it solidifies into the final product, which is this steel billet. Now, this complex is really huge. Everything inside it is gigantic. And I've been with you from the very beginning of this process, the iron concentrate, to the very end.
Thanks for that educational adventure once again. We are almost out of time, but before we go, let's take a look at some news and trends in the housing and light construction industry. Three-dimensional printing has been around since the early 1980s, but it is now gathering steam. And a group of Iranian engineers have developed a massive 3D printer that can print entire buildings. Goodness me.
This giant printer moves on rails and deploys cement. The cement is stacked up layer by layer in coils by the printer to build the structure. The method is cost-effective as it combines several processes into a single step and can print a house in 48 hours. Other advantages of this machine are that it can print a variety of customized structures. The printer is used to make small-scale homes, and only a handful of companies around the world offer this technology.
Electricity is at our fingertips all the time, but what if a building could be powered by the energy of our movement? Well, a new technology is emerging that converts kinetic energy into electricity to help supply power to buildings. Human energy itself, genius.
This technology is a type of electromagnetic flooring which harnesses kinetic energy from footsteps to produce clean electricity. The tiles feed energy to a battery for later use. Excess energy can also return to the electrical grid. The energy can be easily produced from gyms and other areas with high activity and movement, such as busy sidewalks. The technology was first developed by a European company and was recently installed in a Brazilian football stadium to power lights around the field.
And finally, there is a growing trend towards prefabrication of homes. The process is typically called modular construction, which is famous for being environmentally friendly. It's good to be green.
In this method of construction, parts of the building are created at an off-site location. Walls, roofs, and other parts of the structure are manufactured and partially assembled. These components are then transported to the building site and assembled on location. Typically, these are small structures that can be disassembled and moved to different places when desired. There are several companies in Iran that specialize in this type of construction. Their products range from small suites that can be used for camping to entire homes.
Brilliant stuff. Well, that covers our show for today. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss.
Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Rab, Qawwi ala khidmatika jawarihi, washdud ala al-azimati jawanihi. وهب لي الجد في خشيتك والدوام في الاتصال بخدمتك حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. قَوِّ عَلَى خِدْمَتِكَ جَوَارِحِي وَاشْتُدْ عَلَى الْعَزِيمَةِ جَوَانِحِي. Strengthen my limbs in your service. Fortify my ribs in determination. وَهَبْ لِيَ الْجِدَّ فِي خَشْيَتِكَ وَالدَّوَامَ فِي الْاتِّصَالِ بِخِدْمَتِكَ. Bestow upon me earnestness in fear of you and continuity in my being's joint to your service. حتى أسرح إليك في ميادين السابقين وأسرع إليك في البارزين. So that I move easily toward you in the battlefields of the foremost, and I will hurry to you among the prominent. وأدنو منك دنو المخلصين وأخافك مخافة الموقنين. So that I desire fervently your proximity among the fervently desirous, and I will move near to you with the nearness of the sincere. وَأَخَافَكَ مَخَافَةَ الْمُوقِنِينَ وَأَجْتَمِعَ فِي جِوَارِكَ مَعَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. So that I would fear you with the fear of those who have conviction and gather with the believers in your nearness. This gathering with the believers, if we want this to happen in the other world, in hereafter, we have to observe some rules. There are some conditions to be met in order to reach Almighty Allah's special blessings in this very life and hereafter. That's why we mentioned a couple of conditions for Almighty Allah's special blessings. We were talking about association and the companion of good, righteous people. We sufficiently discussed this condition in the previous episode. One other condition that we mentioned, however, was avoiding unlawful food, avoiding eating doubtful meals, let alone unlawful meals. This could be happening in parties and feasts of people who do not have lawful wealth. It is narrated from the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam that says, "من أكل لقمة من الحرام لم تقبل له صلاة أربعين ليلة." The one who eats a bit of unlawful food, his prayer will not be accepted for 40 nights. Of course, this tradition does not mean that the man is not ordered to perform his salat during these 40 days, but rather it means that his salat will not ascend to the Almighty Allah. This is so important that Almighty Allah, throughout the different traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, warns us about.
Strengthen my limbs for your service and sustain the strength of my hands to preserve in your service and bestow upon me the eagerness to fear you and constantly serve you so that I may lead myself towards you in the field with the vanguards who are in the fore rank and be swift towards you amongst those who hasten towards you and urge eagerly to be near you and draw myself towards you like those who sincerely draw themselves towards you and to fear you like the fear of those who believe firmly in you and that I may join the congregation of the faithful congregated near you.
Thank you Allah, now that we're here feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true. Feeling the peace all around, seeing things we can never imagine, hearing the sound of indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
In another tradition, it is said, إِنَّ اللَّهَ عَزَّ وَجَلْ حَرَّمَ الْجَنَّةَ جَسَدًا غُذِّيَ بِحَرَامٍ. Surely, the paradise is forbidden for the one who has been fed with unlawful food in this world. إِذَا وَقَعَتِ اللُّقْمَةُ مِنْ حَرَامٍ فِي جَوْفِ الْعَبْدِ. When a bit of unlawful food is in a servant's belly, لَعَنَهُ كُلُّ مَلَكٍ فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. All the agents in the heavens and in the earth will curse him. That's why Imam Baqir alayhi salam says, إِنَّ الرَّجُلْ إِذَا أَصَابَ مَالًا مِّنْ حَرَامٍ لَمْ يُقْبَلْ مِنْهُ حَجٌّ وَلَا عُمْرَةٌ وَلَا صِلَةُ رَحِيمٍ. When someone acquires an unlawful wealth, his hajj, maintenance of kinship ties, all these will not be accepted. Now, among the other conditions that has to be met if we want to get close to the station of mercy is what we refer to as gluttony. Imam Ali alayhi salam states, مَنْ كَثُرَ تَعْمُهُ سَقُمَ بَطْنُهُ وَقَسَى قَلْبُهُ. The one who is gluttonous has a sick stomach and a hard heart. وَمَنْ كَثُرَ أَكْلُهُ قَلَّتْ صِحَّتُهُ وَثَقُلَتْ عَلَى نَفْسِهِ مَؤُنَتُهُ. The one who is gluttonous has weak health and high expenses. And gluttony is the result of extreme lust. And extreme lust is one of the worst vices. وَالشَّرَهُ شَرُّ الْعُيُوبِ. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says. Dear listeners, thank you for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.